The opening scene begins innocently enough with the usual greetings extended to an arriving soul by members of a cluster group. It might be helpful to refer back to figure 3 on page 143, where I have diagrammed the soul group as they would appear on the upper half of a clock. 1. Employ my clock technique with incoming souls to help me determine soul position as my hypnosis subjects identify members of their cluster group. Case 47, Dr. N. As you draw closer to these souls, how are they arranged in front of you? S. MMM. Sort of a half circle with me coming into the middle. Dr. N. I want you to imagine that their positions conform to the face of a clock. You are in the center, where the hands of the clock are located. The person directly in front of you would be at 12 o'clock. The one on your left is at 9 o'clock and the one on your right at 3 o'clock. Do you understand? S. Yes, but my guide X is behind me right now. Dr. N. That's usual at this first reunion, Ray. We will consider him to be between 7 and 5 o'clock. Now tell me, from what direction on the face of our clock does the first person come forward to greet you? S. To my far left, at 9 o'clock. Note, the first person to come forward and greet us after a life is always a soul of significance. Dr. N. That's fine. Does this soul appear as a male or female to you, or is the soul genderless? S. Tenderly, it's my wife, Marion. Dr. N. And what does she do right now? S. Cups my face in her hands, she gives me a soft, gentle kiss and then hugs my head. Each spirit has their own style of greeting for the incoming soul. After Marion, Ray's grandmother wraps her energy completely around him lovingly, as a cloak. Then, his daughter Anne comes forward. Part of her energy is still on Earth because her current incarnation is not yet complete. Despite this reduction in energy mass, Anne clasps Ray in an exuberant rocking motion while laughing at his unsettled demeanor. As we progressed around the clock, I noticed that my subject grew more uneasy. I suspected an important member of the group was not yet in Ray's line of sight. As we neared the end of the circle of souls, the mood began to change when Ray encountered what one called the hunkering down syndrome, which is caused by one soul hiding behind another. Sometimes the act is playful, rather like hide and seek, but not in this case. Dr. N. Is that everybody? S. Twisting uncomfortably in my office chair, no, I see a shadow behind my Aunt Bess. Dr. N. After calming and reassurance, Ray, tell me exactly what happens next. S. I see a flash of light now. With recognition, oh, it's my father, Carl. He is hiding behind the rest. He wants to be last. He is avoiding me. He is embarrassed at the lightness of the moment, all the hugging, laughing and excitement going on. My father doesn't feel like participating in this right now with me. Darkly, neither do I. Note, a little further on in the session I make the transition back to the soul who was Carl. Dr. N, I want you to move forward to the time when you talk to Carl. Try to give me the details of just how your conversation with him unfolds. S, we soon get to this, the critiquing of what took place and why, talking about our attitudes and judgments. Marion and Anne are there, and Carl is still chagrined. He starts by saying, I was too severe with you as your father. I know what we planned got out of hand. That life, it just got away from me. Dr. N, what does this admission mean to you, Ray? S, with a sense of revelation, Carl's soul is not like the alcoholic, abusive man who was my father. Oh, I see some similarities, but his innate goodness was shut down. He was not able to control the obsessions of this body. Dr. N, forgive me, Ray, but aren't you making excuses for his performance? I mean, Carl had lessons to learn too, didn't he? S, okay, he volunteered to join with a body prone to emotional outbursts. Besides the plan of making things deliberately hard for me, he wanted to see if he could better moderate a body prone to violence. Carl's previous life was one of excesses. He admits this last life we had together did not work out well. Carl did not do the right thing by me or himself. Dr. N. Pressing. You still don't think Carl is excusing what he did to you as your father because of his body type? S. No, you can't get away with it here. Carl is explaining that he failed me in many ways this time around, but he learned from the life and he asks me if one did too. Pause, Dr. N. Please continue with this, Ray. S. A deep sigh. One can see all his anger is gone and this is strange to me now because I haven't yet gotten used to his real self, but it won't take long. Dr. N. As you consider all this, Ray, what negative inclinations does the soul of Carl have which carry into his incarnations? S. He knows it is the desire to control events and people around him. His past life as my father fed into those tendencies. Both of us have trouble in life with confrontation. This is why we work so well with Anne and Marion. They seem to diffuse life's frustrations so much easier than we do. Dr. N., let's return to the circumstances which led to your need to be under the control of a stern father who was supposed to make things deliberately hard. Even if Carl had not gone overboard in his assignment, I don't understand why you volunteered to be his son. S. Laughs. For that you would have to know our guide, Ixax. He uses humor rather than being overly preachy. He doesn't push as hard as an authority figure because Carl and I react badly to a firm hand. Ixax nudges us while letting us believe all the ideas we get come from our own perceptions, pauses. Ixax allows me to think I am getting away with something and then he tweaks my conscience. He is a coach, not a director. Dr. N., well, I'm glad to get that information about Ixax, but how does all this relate to you and Carl and this past life of a damaged relationship between you? S. Patiently, in my life before the last one with Carl I was an orphan and got into some bad habits. I lost my real identity in that body. It was a wake-up call. Dr. N., in what way? S. I had no directional support as a kid. My mother had died. Being alone as a kid can make or break you. The trouble was, as I grew stronger and more self-reliant, I had little concern for others. I created a life of taking and giving back little. I felt people owed me. Dr. N., look, Ray, do you have to go to such extremes? How about having a loving father in the life you planned with Carl to compensate for the one before as an orphan? S. Shrugs, too easy. After my life as an orphan, Ixax asked me, I suppose now you are ready for a life of being pampered by indulgent parents? I said to him, say, that doesn't sound bad at all. Then he added, shall we also arrange for you to be an only child of wealthy parents? We had some fun with this scenario for a while with Carl entering into the discussion with a few quips about wanting plenty of money as my rich father in order to play the horses. He loves horses. Dr. N., so how did you and Carl finally come around to making the decision to have a stressful life together? S., Ixax knows us so well. I am too far along for a soft soap approach to life. In the end we asked him for assignments together in a difficult environment. Dr. N., didn't things go from bad to worse for you as far as loneliness and alienation in your last two lives? I'm wondering if you and Carl learned anything from having such a poor relationship as father and son. S. Pause, while rubbing his hands together in thought. Yes and number, it's true I let my alienation in both these past lives serve as a lack of real progress, but at least I had a father in my last life who didn't leave. I did better with Carl's abuse than total abandonment in my life before Carl, when I was an orphan. Dr. N., that's not much of an endorsement. Was the soul of Carl your father in your life as an orphan? S. Number, Dr. N., what was your primary lesson in the last two lives? S. To keep my identity, no matter what the adversity. This will make me a stronger soul. Dr. N., I'm sure it will, Ray. But I should think you might consider slowing down now and then and take easier lives as a change of pace. Would it be so bad to catch your breath and build a stronger foundation for identity retention in future bodies? S. Clearly upset with this suggestion, no. One told you I can do this and Ixax knows it, too. My strength is perseverance in fighting adversity. My life with Carla's my father was a recovery test from the previous life as an orphan and it was not a failure for me. Forcefully, I learned plenty for the next life and one tell Carl this to make him feel better. Dr. N, how do the two of you bring all this to some sort of resolution in the spirit world? S, in a softer, more contemplative tone, when we are alone we agree to exchange the energy of our thoughts and all the memories of that life together. Dr. N, is this the full mind exchange I have heard about? S, yes, every particle of my identity as Carl's son in that life is transferred to Carl while he projects all his memories as my father to me. It's very subjective, and that's good. In my group we call this passing the cup of sorrows. Dr. N, and is each perspective totally honest? S, there can be no deception here. Dr. N, does this exchange last long? S, no. The transfer is brief but complete. Then we know all the trials and burdens, pain and anger, the drives, from the other's perspective because it is like actually being inside their old body. We become the other person. Dr. N, does this mind exchange bring forgiveness? S, it is so much more than that. It is an indescribable melding of two minds. We can both experience the circumstances which led the other to make certain choices. I feel Carl's lack of fulfillment and he feels mine. Once the exchange is made, it cuts so deep forgiveness toward another isn't necessary. You forgive yourself and then we heal each other. Understanding is absolute. We will try again in a different life until we get it right. After some initial awkwardness in the spirit world following their last lives together, Ray and Carl were relaxed and happy once again in their soul group. This does not mean that Carl's conduct was quickly exonerated in the spirit world. During his life review and evaluation, before he saw Ray, Carl was keenly aware of the excessive pain and hurt he had wrought upon Ray. There are two forces at work here. The first is the potential subversion of the soul's full character by the biophysical attributes of a host body, along with the effects of specific environmental influences. The second factor is the role they were each assigned to play out in the stream of karmic causation. Each life is a piece of fabric which makes up the whole tapestry of our existence. If a family member or friend is harsh and uncompromising, or perhaps weak and emotionally distant toward us in life, we are only seeing an external portion of the entire true character of that soul. Role assignments in life all have purpose. If you grew up with a particularly difficult parent, as Ray did with Carl, ask yourself this question: what did I learn at the hands of this person that has given me wisdom I would not possess if he or she had never been in my life? Ray has had his difficulties in his current life with chemical dependency and obsessive behavior. Yet, at age 45, he is drawing on his inner resources and turning things around. From what Ray has told me, getting in touch with his true soul identity in our session together has been very helpful. The soul of Carl is now my client's older brother, who was not easy on Ray when they were growing up. Many of the same relationship patterns are being played out today as in the past. Even so, these two souls have been far more engaged with each other as brothers than they were as father and son. By not burying unpleasant memories in this life, Ray's soul lives in a mentally healthier body. This time around the soul of Anne, a principal player, is Ray's mother rather than a daughter. She provides a different generational dimension to his current life. Gershon Kaufman has written that shame is a kind of soul murder. One of Ray's issues is the handling of shame. Shame brings a numbness to our minds because it ushers in feelings of non-acceptance, of being no good and having no validity. It may be so overpowering as to preclude any soul progress in a human mind that is shut down. However, Ray is an unusually determined soul who, as we have seen, won't give up these hard lives for an occasional rest. He grows stronger by building on each hard life. Case 47 illustrates that there are souls who continually ask for body types that challenge their weakness of soul character. Both Ray and Carl are souls who easily fall into addictive habits with certain types of body chemistry. Why do they continue to ask for these bodies? They do it for practice. Any obsessive mood-altering behavior is a fix, and Ray's determined to conquer this before moving on. I know this soul is making progress. After two failed marriages, Ray told me he has met the woman of his dreams, but he had to be clean of drugs and alcohol to appreciate her. We learned his wife Debbie is the soul of Marion. A final word about the hunkering down syndrome, where a returning soul might not initially see a group member clearly. When this happens to someone sitting in my office, it may be that the soul who is hiding from the client's conscious awareness is going to have a profound future impact. I recall a young widow who came to see me while still grieving over the recent loss of her husband. We had reviewed all the members of her soul group, including the soul of her departed husband. He embraced HR in an emotional scene where he told her to stay strong and everything would turn out all right. Then she said, "Ah, there is one more." A dark figure, bending down behind the others. "Oh, it's the soul of my future husband. I'm sure of this, but we haven't met yet in this life. I'm not supposed to know who he is right now because it would spoil the spontaneity of our meeting." Interaction between soul groups. I have said that almost all the younger soul groups remain in their own study areas. Particularly with the level I and Liz, their designated spaces are sacrosanct with self-imposed boundaries between classrooms. The underlying basis for these conventions is that all souls have respect for the privacy of the work going on in other study areas. Spiritual classrooms are not like earthly models where we need excuse slips for absences. Souls are free to avoid study engagements with their own classmates at any time. If a soul wants solitude, or to be involved in some private work which they feel is beneficial to them away from their companions, they are free to do so as long as this activity does not interfere with the work of another group. I find that souls are not forced to study and some take long periods of rest. Even so, most souls want to talk to feel left out if they are not with their classmates in some ongoing project. It is the excitement of mastering certain skills that drives them. Thus, most souls don't wish to get involved in the middle of projects by other groups. I find that no two groups in a vicinity are at exactly the same level in all departments of study. So regardless of your developmental level, it is not all that easy to visit another classroom and gain something from a lesson in progress. Visits between soul group members are selective and designed for specific reasons. Since such visitations are by invitations emanating from teacher guides, they are the exception rather than the rule in the spirit world. There are groups who consort with sojourners while others don't appear to see souls from other groups at all, except when they are away from their study areas. When souls arrive near the end of their level 2 training, they begin to push very hard. It is during this time when my subjects most frequently talk about the opportunity of visiting other cluster groups. The client in my next case had the following to say about one of his visits. "Dr. N, why did you want to visit this nearby soul group?" "S, I come from a less serious group than many. I like to visit with this cluster because they are slightly ahead of my own. It helps my game of life to be around better players. Most of them are about ready to move up into independent study and they are very determined. I tell them a few jokes about my group to loosen them up and they give me practical ideas." "Dr. N, do you visit with them often?" "S, no, we know how busy everyone is and I respect that. I don't like to interrupt them too much." "Dr. N, tell me about your last visit and what took place." "S, pause, they were in the middle of a heated discussion. One of their members, called Oric, was going over a dream sequence he had from an incarnation that recently ended. Oric thought they might like to know about this incident." "Dr. N, an incident involving a dream by Oric when he was last in human form on Earth?" "S, that's right. Someone out of incarnation in his group had sent Oric information while he was asleep that his human mind misinterpreted." "Dr. N, well, was that the fault of the sender, this discarnate, or Oric?" "S, you must understand the group I am visiting are pros at this sort of thing. They don't like mistakes. They are a very serious bunch. Dr. N, please go on. What did you learn from the retelling of this incident by Oryk about his dream? S. The morning after his dream on Earth, Oryk said he went into deep meditation to try and sort out the message he had received during the night. I guess it was too muddled in his human mind to make much sense. Oryk was lightly chiding his friend, the one who sent the message, that he ought to perfect his message sending through dreams. Dr. N, what did the sender of the dream say to Oryk? S, he said in an off-handed way, no, you just translated the information I sent you in an imperfect fashion and then you acted wrongly on your own misinformation. Dr. N, and what did the group you were visiting conclude from this discussion between Oryk and his friend? S, I think everyone decided that even though two souls are very close, the imperfect aspects of the receiving human brain can screw up any transmission. The safe thing for a soul in the spirit world to do is transmit more than once and not rely on one medium, such as the dream state. Also, to keep the messages short and very clear. Dr. N, so, this was a productive visit for you. You learned something? S, I always do. Mostly I keep quiet and listen with this particular group. The discussion about transmitting spiritual messages was useful to me and I took what I learned from this visit back to my group for study. Those groups who are uncomfortable with ordinary visitors may welcome an advanced specialist or high-profile soul unique to their experience. I presented an example of this sort of visitation under Colors of Visitors and Groups in Chapter 5. Yet even the clannish groups seem to enjoy socializing out of their study areas. I have already reviewed the community areas where large numbers of primary groups meet to engage in conversation with each other. To many souls, this practice is considered recreation. Because many souls do become restless at times with their formal work, instructor souls often arrange for gatherings at the community centers to hear guest speakers. The visiting speakers at these functions give souls a break from their regular teachers, which allows for different perspectives with topics of general interest to the soul groups. These messages could center around how to appreciate others, the benefits of kind acts, loyalty and integrity, and how to be generous with the gifts each of us possesses. I know the expressions of all these moral sentiments doesn't sound much like recreation, but the speakers spice things up with personal anecdotes and many allegories where they draw parallels to their earthly experiences. There are also other subtle conversations here between masters of their craft and members of an audience of souls that my subjects are unable to translate for me. I have a quote which gives the flavor of such a gathering. Our training is helped by the roving guest speakers. They are different in approach and character from my own guide, and that's helpful. There is one woman called Shay Lagin whom I adore. She comes to our center once in a while and I never miss her. Her particular skill is the ability to take any problem and quickly boil it down to the heart of the matter. She can take a complex idea and get through to me so quickly I somehow know I am going to respond much more effectively the next time it confronts me in life. She tells us to listen to people we don't particularly like on Earth because we can learn something from everyone. Recreational activities in the spirit world, leisure time. This section is dedicated to all those who are afraid that life between lives involves only work and no play. The term R&R, rest and recreation, is quite appropriate in the spirit world and I have listened to the statements from hundreds of clients about what they do outside of their training areas. After physical death, our spirit continues to carry all the fond memories of earthly life. The poignancy of tasting food and drink, touching human bodies, the smell, sights and sounds of walking the deserts, climbing mountains and swimming in the seas of earth remain with the soul. An eternal mind can reminisce about the motor movements and sensory pleasures of a human vessel and all the feelings it generated. Thus, it is natural souls would want to maintain these planetary memories by recreating their former bodies in the spirit world. After all, it was here, in the spirit world, where the conceptual design and eventual energy models for physical organisms began in this section, one will also discuss soul travel to Earth between lives as a part of R&R. Chapter 8 will deal with souls who travel to worlds other than Earth. These soul trips could be construed as working vacations for exploration and study, or they could be devoted exclusively to leisure time. The allocation of study versus leisure time on physical and mental worlds away from the soul's home is flexible, depending upon the primary purpose of the trip and the mood of the soul. Since I am devoting this section to soul recreation, my case examples involving trips to Earth and other activities in the spirit world will be confined to soul entertainment. Recess breaks. My subjects differentiate between the shorter breaks from soul study and those involving more recreation time. This is an example from a male client relating a typical intermission from classwork. There are 10 people in my group and we separate from each other during the short breaks. I like to wander about, away from our enclosure. One might go down the hall and out into an open area where people from many other groups are, milling around and talking. What I like about these casual rest periods is the spontaneity. We can easily meet someone who we might like to be paired up with in some way in a future life. It isn't that we talk shop at these breaks as much as the exposure of just meeting and getting to know other sorts of souls. Of course, there is always the fun of bumping into someone from a past life who we haven't seen in a while and comparing notes. Another subject had this to say about lesson breaks with members of her group who are inclined to choose female bodies. We go to a space surrounded by a lush garden of flowers. It has a beautiful pool with vibrating, restorative, liquid energy. It is shallow so we can wade rather than actually swim. We float around as water nymphs and tell each other funny stories about our lives. In those groups where souls are not yet fully androgynous, I do hear about gender-oriented recreational activities. This does not surprise me. As one have said before, the younger souls are inclined toward one gender when they incarnate on Earth. One subject said to me, during our picnics at the breaks, my women friends and I flirt with some of the male-oriented souls from other groups close by us. We threaten to become their wives in the next life if they don't behave. Quiet solitude R&R, because the work activities of soul groups is demanding, there are souls who prefer settings of solitude during their off time. We all know people who prefer to be alone rather than socialize. Many of us become so distracted by the hectic roles we play in life, it is difficult to learn who we really are. Under case 22 in chapter 4,1 referred to souls of solitude, who require a lengthy period of adjustment alone after particularly hard lives. These souls are not usually the monastically oriented beings who require steady doses of solitude throughout their existence. Certainly, most souls rejuvenate well with some solitude. Yet I have encountered certain souls who seem to require regular periods of seclusion mixed with group class time. One consider many souls of this type to be ascetics. I feel the appeal of periods of quiet time represents a form of mental contemplation similar to that experienced from abbeys to ashrams on Earth where we focus on spiritual principles. A client made the following symbolic statement: I am called the wreath weaver by my group. I like to be by myself so I can see myself. Within my quiet time, I construct circular bands of energy, weaving them together as a tapestry of my lives and that of my 6 closest friends. I display the diversity of our life experiences by weaving different materials, attributes of energy, which represent the trappings of people and events. To execute this properly, I must have total concentration. My subjects say that the desire for time alone in the spirit world comes from an intense need to dwell within the sacred confines of pure thought to try and touch the source from which they sprang. Many say they have profound moments of success, but it is intense work. I have found that some of these ascetic souls have trouble participating in group activities and will shun recreation periods because they prefer contemplation. Despite their detachment during training, down the line these souls are capable of making great contributions in their specialty areas. going to Earth for R&R. There are souls who come to Earth as invisible beings between lives so they can re-experience former physical environments. The only problem with this is they must return to chronological time, which means these souls are caught up with change since they were last here.